Good evening.
Good evening.
Welcome to Santa Cruz Zen Center. Thank you. Thanks for I heard the story that a Zen ancestor was asked, what is this all about? Like Zen, like black robes and coming into a room and listening to words about so-called teachings. What is this all about? And the famous answer that people still write commentaries about today, to this day, is, he said, cypress tree in the garden. That's what he said. Cypress tree in the garden. That's his answer. So he was asked, what is the living meaning of Zen? And he said, cypress tree in the garden. And it's a kind of startling answer, right? So the person who asked the question certainly was startled. And the next thing he said was, teacher, don't guide people with objects, you know. This person had some understanding of Dharma and was like, well, don't guide people with objects, you know, that might be confusing. So he said, I don't guide people with objects, anyone. And then so the person, the monk, asked again, what is the living meaning of Zen? What is my life? And the teacher said, cypress tree in the garden. So, I want with you take an entry into this story together. Because I'm not Chaozhou. I don't know what he was, this person, thinking at all when he said that. And in fact, when his successor was asked about the story later on, he said, like, you know, successor is like somebody who was appointed Zen master, you know, after Chaozhou died, the person who said cypress tree in the garden, that person, you know, was supposed to totally understand what the teacher ever said, ever. So when that person was asked, I heard Chaozhou said cypress tree in the garden, you know, this person said, no, he never said that. Don't slander him. You know, basically like put it to rest. Don't even talk about it. You know. So there is a certain difficulty in picking up stories, and they were in a context, they were in a time, there was a life. So I would just invite us to bring it here, this issue, into this room, and together analyze it. Make analyzation as part of our practice. So let's play it all out. Let's see. Edie. Okay. Why don't you ask me the question? Ask me the question of the koan and say, what is the meaning of Zen or whatever in your words?
What is the meaning of Zen?
Lemon tree in the front garden. So what did it happen to you when you heard that? At that moment.
Mm-hmm. Whatever is present before you, before us, lemon tree is now present.
Is it? Do you see it?
No, but in my mind's eye I can.
How do you see it?
Standing straight and tall and abundant with many beautiful yellow lemons.
What were other responses of people?
I just smiled broadly inside myself because I took it very personally. Because I have touched these actual trees around this place for a long, long time. And when you said lemon tree in the front garden, I just felt happy. Like, oh, here, this place. And I have really positive associations with all the changes that the trees go through. So I feel kind of curious and happy with that answer. Or answer, whatever, that gateway, that possibility.
Okay. Edie?
Well, I was thinking about right here, right now, and there's the smell, and there's the taste of the lemon.
Here?
Yeah. In my experience.
Oh.
So the taste and the smell and the earth and the water, and all the energy that goes into making it grow. And I made a big story about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just the sense that there's an underlying thing that it could even be asked, and then the unspoken proposal that just because I gave you an answer doesn't mean that's that it was anywhere I said it was.
Uh-huh.
I mean, kind of everything falling apart.
Uh-huh.
Like you didn't ask a question that could go anywhere, and I gave you an answer that wasn't anywhere.
Yeah, you just stay still. That's actually an interesting observation. Yeah, Helen.
I felt a disconnect. I didn't feel like you answered the question.
Very good.
Could you have simply been saying like, oh, whatever you're talking about, and in the meantime, you haven't been noticing the trees very well. Could have been just not even an actual answer, just what he spun off to.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah. But how many people know about the tree that I'm talking about? Lemon tree in the front? No, you don't. Didn't see it. Did you guys all saw it?
Mm-hmm.
Did you see it, huh?
No.
Yeah, it's interesting. So, let's do it again. And everybody just watch the moment you hear the answer. Just watch what's happening in your mind. Just that moment, okay? So, who wants to ask me the question? Yeah, okay.
Where am I going with all this practice?
Okay. Crab apple tree in the back garden.
Okay. And for the first split second, it was embarrassing. Like I'd missed something that I should have known.
Where I want to go with it right now is to pick it up and pick also up the answer and see if you can find yourself in that. So we got a crab apple tree out there, and it's a real tree, has some flowers on it, and right now I'm mentioning the name of the tree. So what's happening in your mind is an image is coming up. Right? And so this image is either related to the actual tree out there, a tree that can be known. We can go there and check out the tree. Like, we can look at the flowers and check out and smell the flowers and see the height of the tree and touch it and feel it. And if there are crab apples coming, you know, you like do something with it or not. Give it to the pigs. And so it's an object. An object that can be known, but it's not in the room. Are you with me? What's your name? What's your name?
Me?
No.
David.
David, are you with me? Okay, stay with me.
Okay.
Okay. So it's an object out there, it can be known. But right now I'm saying crab apple tree, and it's not here. It's not present, okay? It's not in the room. So what's happening to you is you have an image of either that crab apple tree, because, like Kathy said, she knows the tree so intimately around here that she might have an image of a memory of when she prunes a tree or when she, you know, engaged the tree. Right? There's a certain history with the tree. If you don't even know there's a crab apple tree out there, you might just remember flowers from last spring that you saw, some petal flowers. So there's a memory of that. And if you don't even remember that, you might remember shade back out there. You know, so any memory of the area out there is coming up in your mind. So that's what's present. It's a mental image. But it's a mental image of something that can be known and can be investigated. So the more you approach the object, crab apple tree, if you're more engaged with it, the more you know it and get more intimate with it. Okay? So the same with the lemon tree. Lemon tree. It's an object, can be known. You can go out there, you can smell it, you can taste the lemons, you can verify it's a lemon tree. So what happened in the mind was, what is this all about? You know, you have a certain determination and you suddenly get an image in front of you of a tree, something unexpected. So that's first of all startling, but it's an object that can be known, it's very familiar to you. And the way you know this object is also by isolating it. Like, it's not a stone, it's not a street sign, it's not a church, it's not, a flower. It's a tree, so you're isolating it. And then you're isolating it that it's not an oak tree, it's not a pine tree, you know. So we keep to know it, and that's how our mind works. It kind of comes up as a mental image. And that's what we then know. But all you have right now is a mental image. So my proposal right now is when Chao Chu was sitting there trying, you know, this person, like really trying to engage. And he puts him something forward. You know, what's the living meaning of Zen? It's like cypress tree in the garden. It's, I'm pointing. All I'm doing is pointing. That's all I can do. Point out there for objects that can be known. The cypress tree can be known. If I say cypress tree right now, you can't know cypress tree. You have to go to China, find out cypress trees, right? But you can check out the lemon tree. You know, you check out the crab apple tree. Something that can be known. So, but how do we know it? How are we going to know this tree?
Through my senses.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it's either right now, which senses are engaged in order to know it? How can you know this tree right now?
Right in the room here, uh-huh. Or outside? In the room, just thinking about it, the object.
Right.
The perception.
Right. We can't taste it. We can't smell it. The only image you have is a mental image. So, at the time when Shakyamuni Buddha was giving the first teachings, he was talking about the Four Noble Truths. And in that Four Noble Truths, it was the right view of things, right intention, right thought. So, that comes foremost. It comes foremost to know which mental image you have. So if I say cypress tree in the front yard and you have a totally different lemon tree in the front garden, you have a lemon tree in your mind that has, you know, big, large and has full of lemons, that's a memory and it's not the tree out there. So it's a little, you know, so it's a mix up of two things. And that's the core of our sickness, is this mix up. We have a mental image because we're not familiar with the object. So we are mixing things up. And for example, the crab apple tree out there. If I just say crab apple tree, is there an image coming up in your mind? Just any old image of a crab apple tree? Yes? No? Yeah? So, is that crab apple tree the crab apple tree that's out there? No? No. No, it's not. So if it's so difficult to really know, even if you would stand in front of the crab apple tree, would you really know it? Because it's changing, right? Right now it has flowers. I was surprised it had flowers right now. I always thought it was just like this dead tree standing back there with just a bunch of leaves. But there were flowers out there. So there's like something about the objects that always surprises us because they're vivid, they're constantly changing, they're impermanent. They're like in a total flux. So our ideas of them don't reach it. So in that context, there is where the suffering comes up. That's like our mixture of confusion right here. And so the teachings, what Xiaoqi was hoping to do, what is the meaning of Zen, is to do a clear pointing that to something that can be known and can be engaged with, that's the least confusing, like a tree maybe, and that can help us clarify and go beyond. Because would you say that that which totally liberates you from all suffering you can find in your senses? Did anybody find anything in your smell, in your taste, in touch? Anything that would totally liberate you? I mean, if that were so, give it, share it. I mean, I want to know about it. Anything in any thought you had that was like totally liberating? Freeing from all suffering, never to return. I mean, this is kind of what we just said, that the way we know something is through smelling, tasting, touching, seeing, and thinking too. Thinking is included. Can we have a thought that would totally free us? There is a proposition that that can be the case, that there can be a thought that can be very liberating. But is it really that thought? When given it, how many wise thoughts have been spoken and we have heard? How often did we already hear something that's so enlivening and invigorating, and for a moment we have this like opening of understanding and insight that's really helpful? And was that the end of all suffering? Yes, Helen?
I have a question, because when you said that we would know something through our senses, I wonder what you mean by knowing, because I would say I can have an experience, even with thought. I mean, even with an aha experience, it's an experience. I don't know if it's knowing. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what knowing is.
Yeah, what is knowing? I mean, can have an experience. I mean, we can have experiences. Right. Like right now. And are we open to each one of it? Or where does our setup kicks in, picks and choose? Well, a student asked Xiaoqi on one point if the cypress tree has Buddha nature, right? And Xiaoqi said yes. And then the student said, well, when will the cypress tree reach perfect enlightenment? And he said, at the end of the universe, or when the sky comes down, something like that, when the sky comes down to the earth. And the student said, well, when will the sky come down to the earth? And Xiaoqi said, Well, when the sattvic tree attains enlightenment.
Mm-hmm. I've heard this story before in other forms. It seems like the student is always trying to get the master to say, tell me what it is. What is it? What is it? Do you think that's what's happening again in this story?
Is it happening with you and me right now?
Well, we're all presuming, because you're in that seat, that if we ask you questions, you'll tell us what it is.
Yeah. I think that's a big treasure of Soto Zen, this setup. And it can be filled different ways. Frustration is a big part of the setup, getting, you know, aroused. But and maybe frustrated. But the possibility to be able to gain and reach and engage and question is a big part. And with keep bringing up analysis, that's, I hope to bring that up, because we do can think it through. It's not a party pooper to say, well, the ultimate is not in the senses, or it can't be, you know, grasped with the senses. It's actually an opening, because, well, let's explore the senses fully then, you know, because if you're fully in the senses, you are the closest to it completely. The more vivid and closest and fully in the senses you are, the closest it's that which makes you. Why else would you have some? One beauty I find reflected in the old texts is generosity with flowering words and phrases. And in their context and in their time, I believe that they were all in it, because they all had the same clues and the same, you know, time. Catchy words of their times that, you know. And so I think I want to encourage you right now to feel confident to come up with your own expressions and your own explorations of this very moment, and trust that your words and your phrases that you're coming up with are and maybe also check, you know, if that's so, if it's your intention to, that they point towards and yearn towards and go towards that which you want to realize, that which you want to came here to seek for. It's nowhere else but in your own soul, in your own heart. So here's a setup, right? Of you yearning, coming in here, wanting an answer, wanting some inspiration, wanting some something. Check it out. Tell me what you want. And my offering you words that are pointing. They're pointing. And I'm not saying I'm pointing in the right direction. I'm just pointing, right? And that's all I'm doing. And you check it out where it goes. So in this way, we can engage. And I would also say that's a very, it's a dance, and it's a very female approach. I had recently a conversation about how to be more female in Zen. So here's one offering. So, anything you want to bring up? Otherwise, I'm telling you some more stuff.
I'm heard a lot of these Zen stories where the student asks the teacher some straightforward question, what is Zen? And he gets this kind of non sequitur answer. And you end up scratching your head. And then maybe some teacher further on down the line kind of translates what that answer means in the context of today. And I'm just sort of sitting here scratching my head.
Yeah. And do you still have the question?
No. I wouldn't begin to think to even ask that question.
Oh. How would you ask the question?
How would I ask a question? How are you feeling?
You would want to engage me in a personal conversation?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And how would that help you to liberation?
I think that any step in any direction leads you there.
So again, when we have a when we have a thing in front of us, like this cup, I mean, you wanted to ask me a personal question, but here's another object to engage with. There's always something to engage with around. So if you have a thing like this cup, which senses are experiencing it right now for you?
Eyes.
Eyes? Okay. I have also body. And that's it. So what do you know about this cup now?
Can you tap on it?
What do you know about it?
That you can hold it.
Hold it? Do you know it?
That
heavy. Yeah. Does it have a shape? Form?
It's green.
It's green, it has a color.
And I'm assuming it's ceramic.
It's ceramic. So it has some substance made out of something earthy, something solid. And it's
probably got something in it because you're not turning it upside down.
That's right. That's right. Good. So you have an idea, you have color and you have form, okay? So that's what we know about this cup. So do you think there are more cups in this world? In this room? I think there's only one. Is that right? Do you see any other
cups? There's another one up in the closet.
In the closet. So, but do you see it?
No.
No. So that's a thought.
That's the only one I can see.
What?
In my mind, there's two cups.
Yeah, in your mind
is
cool.
In my visual sphere, there's one
cup. One cup. Mm-hmm. Okay. So how close can we stay with one event? Do you see how easy it is to go into the story?
I'd love to do that.
About more cups being in the world? Right now, there's only one cup, right? Who's proposing there are more cups in this world? So there's only one cup so far, right? So how close can we stay with what our experience? There's one cup here, and it's green. We agree on that. And we agree on it that it's hard and solid, and we can hold it carefully. So to stay present, it's kind of asking for a sacrifice. It asks of a sacrifice of all that we think we know. You know? And, like, would you ask me how I feel? How content would you be when you ask me how do I feel if I say neutral? Because there are only three feelings in this world. It's pleasant, painful and neutral. And that's not us. That's kind of like a, you know, socially, you know, limited explanation, you know. So how close can we stay with our experience, and when do we really start going into a story about our experience? And it's very fast. Like just saying lemon tree, there were like quite a bunch of lemon trees out there, you know, in the front, but it's only this one in the front garden, and depending on your familiarity, you have a certain image about it. So,
I feel like I can't actually really see the cup without my idea of the cup mixed in.
Yes.
Is it possible?
To see it without the idea of cup?
Yeah.
No. No. No, we do have ideas, and it's important to have ideas, otherwise we can't engage.
Right? Well, if you've never seen a cup before.
Yeah, then would you know what it is?
No.
No.
Your mind would start generating things that approximated it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It would probably connect with something. You would maybe say it's like a pencil holder or something. Whatever you know it is.
Right.
And it's interesting, it's always going back into memory. So you like, each time you experience some object, it's like opening a big bag and pulling out things, you know, that you remember. And in fact, I heard the teaching says nothing that you haven't experienced, you know, in your fantasies and visions. Everything, for example, if you fear, have a certain fear of something, you probably have a fear of something you already experienced before, because otherwise how would you know it? So there's a certain huge bag of knowledge that we have and that we engage and put onto things the moment we see it. So can you know it, be free of it? It's, I mean, we have those concepts and those labels to go to work and to come out of bed in the morning, to eat and to, you know, it's helpful. And but it comes, it's a problem if you, I mean, in this realm it's helpful, right, to know if I go to this restaurant I get food and it gives them money and they're happy, you know, and if I don't give them money they're not happy. So you know this kind of convention, and if you follow it, that you come, you know, have a good life. I mean, you come, you get what you want. So there are ideas that are really helpful to engage with, but some ideas are not helpful. Like if you, for example, think, oh, this person doesn't, you know, this person didn't left the room and didn't smile and didn't say goodbye, and that means they're mad at me, you know. So that's your story, but the object of reference is actually only a face that didn't smile. Now you don't know why the person didn't smile, right? It's just the only thing you knew is a face that didn't smile. So the object's experience is generally pretty plain. The stories you're putting onto it is huge, and we keep mixing that up, and that's where the whole suffering comes from. So to start analyzing the simple objects like trees, they're pretty neutral, you know, it's like form and shape and maybe taste, you know, I can, but if it comes to people, and then I really like, you know, person, you know, maybe even more than just person, in the sense of how easy do we label just person onto every body that looks like one, and generalize people in this way, and are not open to the individuality of each one of them, the vividness and the particular story of each one of the persons. So there's a certain generality we're putting onto things because that's our idea of them, like cup. If I ask you get a cup from the Cheetan shed, you would know what I'm talking about. If we wouldn't have a shared concept about cup, what would we do, right? They say, get me the plow, doesn't help. Even if like, say, get me the pretty cup out of the kitchen. You're like, what? Pretty cup? Which is a pretty cup? More like, well, get me the white cup. you got to be really specific about the objects. And so that means engage them, know them, be intimate with them, so you don't get slide off into this story realm of they don't like me, they hate me, I'm the only one in this world, I'm alone, nobody's here, nobody loves me. I mean, it's painful. Painful. What are we basing it on? If you have a thought like that, look at what are you basing it on? Well, I'm basing it on because I didn't get any email during the last week. You know, I mean, there, we have like certain stories, and then we can analyze that story, and then like, well, did I really get none? Well, it's a non-profit organization like me, so like sending me things. Yeah.
When what you said about the idea about the cup, you know, just made me think that, well, of course, a baby would look at that differently.
Uh-huh.
Right? Wouldn't have. Just made me think about what that's like.
And it's fascinating, like, for them. I know what the world is like. They're pretty open to everything. But once they start language, it's interesting. Like, they say, learn the word dog. And everything is a dog for a while. Then you have to like say, no, not a dog, it's a cat. So again, you have to go over this elimination process of like, it's not a flower, it's a tree, you know? Like, it's not a stone, it's a tree. And it's not an oak tree, it's a lemon tree. So you gotta get specific. It's, you know, it's not a thermos cup, it's a ceramic cup. Holds, you know. It's interesting in Zen teachings, we in this environment, we mostly go pretty general in our teachings too, because we want people to find out by themselves. And that's why normally in monasteries, people only with a certain determination were allowed to enter. Like if you have too much doubt or too much concern, you wouldn't sit for 5 days straight still and then get yelled at. You know, I mean, there's a certain and even Zendos at the, in monasteries always have like a stepping, what do you say, like,
threshold
that's pretty high. They kind of step over it. There's a high threshold in order to enter a Zen center, because your determination has to be strong in order to stay there and endure the whole formal thing that doesn't tell you anything besides be present and watch out what you're doing right now, you know, engage thing, you know, fast. And it looks rude from outside, it looks very male too, I confess, you know, all this male energy, going. But it has its effect in the sense of, you know, you have to stay really present and vivid with the objects of engagement, otherwise you just drop out, you have to just stay present. And and the school, which is very gentle, the way we do it is just we keep repeating it over and over, stay present, it's fine, just keep going, stay present. So there's a certain gentleness that's in the Soto Zen school of Zen, but still less instructions, not many instructions. Just cypress trees are in the front garden, you know. You want to know about the real meaning of Zen? Look at the trees, you know. I don't know, many words. Are there any more questions?
Yeah. It's not so much a question, but just the we've been doing a class on the Genji Koan, and this last Sunday in particular, it seems like that what we were talking about was, you know, direct experience versus the conceptual addition, you know, the delusion of the conceptual.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, I wasn't in the class, so I I can pick up on the general phrase, delusion of the conceptual.
Well, it seemed like to me, uh-huh. that was the description of what delusion is. That
yeah.
It's that concept, those concepts that we place and separate us from direct experience.
Right. There, yeah, that's it. And I hear you say concepts that hinder us towards direct experience, and I have my version of it, and you're having your version of it, and did, you know, we maybe met on the agreement of, I have the phrase, I agree on the phrase, you know, I can include the phrase into whatever I was pointing at, and that's all we have. I still don't know what you really mean by it. I mean, there's a huge, probably, discussion and memory from the conversation you have, and those people who were in the class probably have certain ideas coming up from that conversation that are now being mixed together with what you just heard here. You know, again, like, what's really happening? So here it's just ideas that are popping up, mixed together, trying to fit into a new criterion.
I think the real important thing is knowing that we're making up stories about each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I know that, I mean, I don't know exactly what that has to do with the cypress tree, but I know that that has to do with Zen practice very intimately, to really be aware of that, how we're always making objects out of things and others. And the impact that that has, the damaging impact,
mm-hmm.
and how it keeps us from really meeting who's really there.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea of engaging with the person who's really there, what is that?
Mm-hmm.
What does that look like?
Mm-hmm.
That's a question.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if you might reflect on that. What does that look like to fully engage with the being?
With a person?
Mm-hmm. Knowing that you're making a concept story about who you think they are and acting in relationship to those constructs. How do you practice with that?
Well, if it doesn't come across in the way I'm responding to you and seeing you and talking to you, I don't know what else I should say to you. I mean, you're asking me how to engage.
In your life, when you find yourself in that practice situation, I mean, there's no like right answer. I'm just, you know, joining you and poking around in this material.
Yeah. David has something to say. Look.
Without putting words in your mouth. I think what she was driving at is that once we realize there's this tendency to just roll with our early conditioning, you know, and kind of mount things on top of that and draw things out of it, just go, go, go. And then the Zen intention to slow down and kind of step outside of that skin, perhaps that's the image there, and then just, and she was asking you, I think, what do you do to be able to catch yourself not just having an habitual interaction with someone and actually being immediate, actually being present with whatever they might clearly be instead of what you conjure them to be or surmise. Something like that? Okay, but then...
No, that's a great paraphrase, sir.
Thank you. Okay, so what do you do to hold yourself in check or get yourself to be real or immediate or, you know, what I said?
Well, first of all, do you feel I'm present with you right now?
Pardon?
Do you feel I'm present with you right now?
I haven't been thinking about it.
Well, I'm giving you an offering right now.
It depends
I'm
how
speaking
you answer my question.
What?
If you answer my question, then you're with me. If you just go sideways, then it's like we never met.
Well, it's interesting because I'm hearing a certain expectation. First of all, so I wonder if I even can meet you because there's a certain expectation coming from your side of I have to answer your question. as of course, otherwise I might walk sideways, and that wouldn't be it.
We're all taking chances here.
And secondly, I would say one thing to train with is to repeat the other person's question. For example, I understand your question as you're asking me to which extent how I meet somebody when I'm noticing myself going into a big story about my meeting with this person, and how can I catch myself? Yeah?
Yet another great paraphrase on my question.
And there were two answers. Did any of this meet?
How?
Yeah, do you have another answer? I gave two. Is anybody more?
Maybe you would try to let go of your perceptions and just be present with the person, if you could. Just try to wipe the board. I don't know how, but if you're aware of it, then you've already kind of stepped out of it. That helps the awareness.
I also think of somewhere in here maybe about this, you said how the it's an impermanent, like the senses are impermanent experience, but is there some, in contrast to that, some permanent about the way we often see things, and then maybe that could apply to people somehow?
So here's another answer.
Yeah, so tons of answers. Great. It's also almost time, so maybe one or two more comments, and then we'll need to wrap it up.
She was pointedly asking you how you put yourself in check or find that careful moment of, oh, I'm running away with myself, I'm being accidental instead of clear and present. How do you catch yourself? Or do you just willy-nilly throw yourself in front of people and see what happens? Would be the backwards way of asking that same thing. And I don't think you're going to.
Why wouldn't I?
Does subtle mean willy-nilly?
Yes. Why not? I think. Yes.
I was just going to share that it's come to me on this topic, you know, several times in the last few months, where I've noticed that I'll see somebody who I have had good experience with in the past, you know, so it's not someone I know really well, but especially if I've had a negative experience, and I realize how much I bring that to, and I've been actually intentionally trying to say, this is not the same person. I'm going to see this person like a completely, like I've never met them like it, because right, I'm not the same as I was last month, or yesterday, you know, this, why think that this person is the same person? So anyway, it's been kind of fun trying that.
That's great.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Delusions are inexhaustible.